Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join in on the phone, online, or via a text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And good morning, everybody, and welcome to a bus here on News Talk 1400 DWS on this Monday morning. As we work our way through the month of March, headed for April next week, we have this show today, Monday Morning Quarterbacks. We'll do it again next Monday, and then we'll give Lauren some time off after that. So he can,
I need it.
He can take it easy after that. But we'll get back to our regular Monday morning programming,
I
guess.
Quit watching basketball?
It's hard not to watch, isn't it?
Oh, boy. I've been glued.
I have, too, especially with all the snow we had over the weekend. It was great to just sit inside and watch basketball.
Kidding.
So there were some really great games. We'll talk about the NCAA tournament quite a bit today because that's the big headline. Men's Final Four, of course, determined. The women are about to get to their Final Four as well. They have a couple of games left as far as that goes. But lots of other Illinois recruiting news we can talk about along the way. Football and, of course, basketball looking for players. That is ongoing.
Beth Hannish Billy is here right now. Try that one. Beth Hannish Billy.
I'm not going to try that one yet.
I've been working on it. Upstaged on that one. That's the only time ever. I've been working on it for a week.
Well, it's been fun. We got spring training done.
Oh, yeah.
So wrapping up, and we got baseball starting this week.
Ozuna's hitting for the Cardinals. He's had two homers and four doubles in just the last 4 or 5 days.
Speaking of Major League Baseball, they're going to do opening day on Thursday.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to play.
That's new, isn't it?
That's the first time it's happened in 50 years.
Yeah.
And we're going to have Darren Fletcher sit in with me on Thursday just to talk baseball for an hour.
It's
with
funny
opening
how,
day,
so. How we got jumped into baseball when they reported, and then basketball has just taken over, and now we'll swing back to baseball.
What about Loyola of Chicago?
It's an amazing story.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They're really good is the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't just – this is not a fluke. They're really – when you get as many open shots as they got against good, decent teams, I mean, they just killed Kansas State. It wasn't even a contest.
There's a lot to talk about with Loyola's Ramblers. We'll talk about that a little bit. Of course, in 1963, they won it all, and the team they beat to get to the Final Four was Illinois. And a guy named Dave Downey was on that team, among other well-known names. Of course, the Big Ten champions that year. And Dave Downey's going to join us here in a few minutes to talk about
a heck of a story here coming
with Dave. So we'll get into that.
And they played the same day as Mississippi State played Loyola. Yeah. I'm sorry, Mississippi State. This wasn't. It was the same tournament.
Same regional
in East Lansing.
In East Lansing, yeah.
And just think, I mean, there were only 16. Was there only 16 teams?
I think it was 25, 24, maybe.
Yeah, it was an odd number.
Yeah, it was an odd number.
But Illinois only had to play in the Sweet 16.
Right.
They had a bye into the 16.
That's right. Beat Bowling Green and then played Loyola.
Yeah.
And Loyola went on to win that game and win the national title again, eventually over Cincinnati. So that was in 1963. Dave Downey was on the Illinois team that played Loyola that year. And, of course, Loyola now in the Final Four. Also, later this morning, we're going to visit with Tim Brando, one of the signature voices of college athletics. Got to meet him a little bit this year when he came to town to do a couple of Illinois games. And just a great guy. He's been on radio, TV, ESPN, CBS, you name it. He's done it. Football, college, pro, whatever. Even auditioned for Wheel of Fortune at one point in his career.
Really?
So he's done everything. But Tim Brando joins us in hour number two for a while. And we'll take your phone calls, emails, and texts along the way, so feel free to send those in, 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, or email us talk at WDWL. We are coming up on 9:10. We'll take our opening break, and we'll come back, get Dave Downey in here, and reminisce a little bit about 1963 next.
This is Jerry Wallace with Wallace Land.
Welcome back, Penny, for your thoughts. News Talk 1400 DWS. Open lines here this morning as we do our Monday morning quarterbacking. 351-5357 is how you can call us, or text us, actually. 356-9397 is how you call us. And you can email us, talk at WDWS.com. After all the snow over the weekend, 30 degrees, some partial sunshine anyway, at 9:11. Hey, tax day is quickly approaching, the deadline to file. Hate to remind you of all this, but it's Tuesday, April 17th. Avoid costly penalties, keep money in your pocket, contribute to retirement accounts by April 17th, organize your records, file electronically. Busey reminding you of all of this. The typical taxpayer receives nearly $3,000. Make the most of your refund this year by paying down bad debt, such as credit cards and private student loans, building savings, retirement, investment accounts, or establishing or restoring an emergency fund. Take advantage of my TurboTax at Busey. Just go to Busey eBank on that. Tax laws are complex or changing, so make sure you have all the information you need before making investment and tax decisions. Visit Busey.com. Stop by one of their many convenient locations to get started today on your maximum refund. Busey, one of our sponsors here on Penny for Your Thoughts. We are pleased to be joined this morning as we talk college basketball. We go back to 1963. Dave Downey is with us here, Illini great. And you play those Loyola Ramblers that everybody's talking about from 1963.
We did, and they were very good. They were probably, they won the NCAA that year, and they were the best team, I'm certain, in the whole country.
Yeah, so you thought that at the time, that this was a team that could win it when you played them?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Jerry Harkness went for 30-some against us, and he was a real great player. I had the privilege of playing against Vic Rouse. He thought I was lucky, and I was glad that he thought that.
I looked it up. You had 20 points in that game.
Yeah, I had 20 both nights, and I was kind of boring that way. I got about 20 and 10, never got a lot more except one time, and never got a lot less except one time.
Before we have Lauren come in, and we'll talk a little bit about that game and that tournament, what do you make of this year's Loyola team, the way they pass the ball, the way they move? It's fun to watch.
They're really a fun team. I'm happy for them. I'm happy for the sister. A 98-year-old chaplain is a nice thing. It's good for college basketball because there's been enough bad things going on.
Mm-hmm. Lauren?
Well, I think we got to go back to the circumstances in 1963, and you explain that's the same year that Loyola played Mississippi State, the same night that you played Bowling Green, the night before you played Loyola. This was a regional in East Lansing. At that point, you were down to 16 teams in the tournament, and I think you got a bye. Illinois got a bye that year from the number that, what was it, 24 teams in the tournament?
Well, always up until then, the Big Ten was bye'd into the rounds of 16.
Okay.
That was before they expanded it, and so we played Bowling Green with Howie Comives and Nate Thurman as their two All-Americans.
They were really good.
They were very good. But on the other hand, Mississippi State had to get themselves out of the state by pulling a trick on the governor, which we loved. They faked the governor by bringing in a bus and acting as if they had gone up to Tennessee to catch a plane. Instead, they went to Shreveport on a different bus and got out of the state so they could play.
Yeah, I think Babe McCarthy was the coach, and he went a separate direction. He had everybody faked out because they thought that since Babe wasn't with the team, that the team wasn't going to go.
Yes.
And he met the team, I believe, in Nashville later, I mean, en route, and joined the team when they stopped in Nashville and went on to East Lansing.
Yeah, they finally got there, and they got to play. They had won the SEC the other 2 years.
Yeah, they won 59, 61, and 62 and didn't go.
No, the governor didn't think it was appropriate to play against black players. That shows what he knew.
Yeah. Well, when you played that first game, that first night, did you realize what the impact of the other game between Mississippi State and Loyola, the fact that Mississippi State had all that problems getting there?
We knew about that. They actually had a play-in, so that was not just the first game. The Loyola had a play-in in that year. Mm-hmm. Because they were not considered to be a major program.
Really? But Mississippi State, how good were they? What was their, I mean, what caused the change from 62 to 63? 62 they couldn't go, 63 they managed to do it.
Well, they tricked them. The governor still wasn't going to allow them to go, but they had to figure out a way because the coach thought they deserved to play in the NCAA, and they did. And when you think about it, the fact that they were playing against blacks, there had been, Cincinnati started three black players, very good black players.
Was Tony Yates on that team?
Tony Yates was on the team that won 2 years, and then the third win.
Mm-hmm.
So they had beaten Ohio State. Ohio State had two black players when they won it. course, Bill Russell had played, and he had singled on the NCAA.
By the way, the University of Illinois at that time had one black player.
When we played, you're saying? Yes. We had had more than one, but we had only one on the squad then.
And Bill Burwell.
Bill Burwell. And he was a really good player, much better than people remember.
We're here with Dave Downey. He's, of course, Illini great. Everybody knows Dave around town. Was part of the 1963 Big Ten champions, played in the NCAA tournament that eventually lost to Loyola, the team that, of course, won the championship. And Loyola's back in the Final Four for the first time since that 1963 season. In that Illinois-Loyola game, you had 20, Burwell had 10. You were down 8 at half. Anything else stand out about that game?
The game was not as close as the final score. They had they beat us badly, and it was somewhat embarrassing, but they were just a very good team. And they came, they had one of those miracles like they had this year in a way, because in the finals they were down 16 to Cincinnati.
Ooh.
And Cincinnati never let anybody come back. But they came back, tied it, and went into overtime and won the game.
Now, the game that you played in against Loyola was in at the old Jennison Fieldhouse, right? Is that where
yes.
that was played?
Yeah, they didn't. That was before there was the big hoopla about the NCAA. As a matter of fact, in Illinois, they showed the high school state tournament, the state finals, and Dave delayed the final game in the NCAA.
Isn't that amazing how things have changed, huh?
Well, it's amazing, yes.
Well, it certainly is. Dave Downey with us for a few more minutes as we talk about Loyola University. And, of course, in that particular year, you also played Cincinnati, I believe, earlier in the year, right, in Chicago?
We played Cincinnati in a doubleheader that Loyola played in. In that time, that was the biggest crowd ever to see a college basketball game. It was before the game with Houston and UCLA. Mm-hmm. And it was a really big time, and we got beat by Cincinnati as well. But not they were not as good as Loyola. Loyola played Santa Clara, so we had 1, 2, 3, and number 7 in that doubleheader.
Hmm. That game was played January the 26th, was right in the middle of your Big Ten season.
Yes, that
was Cincinnati.
Well, that was because that was when they could get the stadium, and that substituted for what we usually played, the Notre Dame game.
Notre Dame earlier that season.
We played them at a time when we shouldn't have. we had just won the ECAC and we were undefeated.
In Madison Square Garden.
You're right. And we came back and had to play on New Year's Eve in the stadium. Got beat by Notre Dame for our first loss. But they were not a bad team.
Look who Illinois played in a stretch of games here. Oklahoma, then you played Pennsylvania, then NYU, which was really good in those days. West Virginia, Notre Dame, then you went into the Big Ten. Iowa, Ohio State was number 5 in the nation. You really had a schedule there.
Yeah, and we were playing great at that time. Mm-hmm. By the end of the season, we were not playing so well.
Let me ask you, Dave, about watching the current Loyola team, the way they pass and cut and move, and you watch a lot of basketball. The game of college basketball itself, do you like to watch it? We had a high-level game yesterday, Kansas and Duke. I mean, that was a heavyweight fight yesterday.
Well, I really enjoy college basketball and professional football. So I don't really care a lot for professional basketball, although with Stephen Curry, I've gotten a little more involved.
Yeah. Well, the way these offenses, I know one thing Brad Underwood has talked about is trying to implement is passing, moving the ball. He doesn't like it to stick. Can you kind of see where he's headed with what he wants to do?
Well, what he wants to do is to have some people who can make the threes. And that's the difference right now. Loyola is making those threes. They've got good spacing, and when they get open, they make them. And it's almost as if they're playing without any pressure because they had nothing to lose and everything to gain. And it'd be fun to see them win it.
It's interesting to me how many times they get in for layups without size and avoid having their shots blocked, oftentimes going to reverse layups in order to use the rim to protect them. They don't get many shots blocked, and they get a lot of layups.
Well, they're a pretty good team. They're a little better than people realize.
A lot better.
And they're strong. And they've got the 98-year-old sister who's got a pathway to God.
She has been quite a story, hasn't she?
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Monsignor Duncan when he was around all those years and, you know, the same kind of influence, right?
Well, he had a kind of an influence, but I would say his path was better. He had more money than Sister. But.
Who's going to win the championship, do you think?
I think Villanova.
You think so?
They're the only one that I have chosen correctly, and I did choose them to win, but I think they're a little more physical than the other teams, and the Brunson kid is tough.
What do you think of Michigan?
Michigan is playing well, but I think that they've about had it.
Yeah. Well, they've won, what is it, 13 in a row, I think they've won. They haven't lost
for
a long time.
They did good at the right time the last 2 years.
Yeah, they. I think Beilein does a great job with them, and he's got a couple of those kids from out of the country that are good players and play with a lot of heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dave, we just wanted to have you on and talk a little bit about the 63 Ramblers because they're the hot story right now with those guys being around and the current Loyola team, and you experienced part of that history. So,
well, they have been good citizens, too. They worked really hard at being absorbed. They didn't make a big deal out of the fact that they had to fight a lot of discrimination, and they were actually ahead of the Glory Road, the Texas Western people.
It was just 3 years later.
Yes, and the difference was there wasn't a bad guy in the earlier years. Adolf Rupp was a target for them, for people to talk about a real racist. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that. Harry was not in that category at all. We had Manny and Gov, and we had Bill Burwell, Ed Searcy. We had a couple people that we couldn't keep, Pete Cunningham. Any one of those guys, we would have won the NCAA, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You, when you talk about the freshman team that you would have had, that didn't really develop because some left, Jerry Sloan, how much a difference would he have made?
Well, Jerry was a year behind us. He would have been the one player that would have made the difference, too. And Pete Cunningham had 90 points in a high school game. So we had some players, and we were not bad. We had a good career.
But that was 1963. Just think, the entire SEC didn't have a black player until 1967 at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Although that's 3 or 4 years later.
Yes. And the Big Ten didn't have any until mid-50s. It was they had football and track, but they did not have black basketball players.
Yeah. Do you run into any of those Loyola guys from time to time?
I have not. Anything? I read the book that was written about them. Mm-hmm. We were just kind of an asterisk in that. But they had they did a good job, and they've been good citizens. I think Vic Rouse has died, but the rest of them are still around.
Yeah,
it was great to see Harkness at the game the other day. He's still hanging with the team.
Yep.
That's great.
Good. Hey, Dave, thanks for the time today.
Well, thank you.
I really
you.
Appreciate
it's
it.
It's always fun, and I like Monday Morning Quarterback and the old guy that is still hanging in there.
He's relevant. He's our sister Jean, I guess. Is that right? Sister.
Well, he's relevant, and that's a nice thing. I hope I am when I'm his age.
Well, Dave, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
There we go. Illini great Dave Downey with us. 925, back with more after this. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS, 356-9397 is how you can join us on the phone. It's always great to see Dave Downey. Of course, what holds that single-game record still?
53. Huh? By the way, did you see the two scores? And everybody knows this. It's not news. But two games against Indiana that year. In the first time they played Indiana, let's see, the score was 104-101, Illinois. And the second time they played them at Indiana, 103-100, Indiana won. So all four scores in the two games were over 100, and Dave got 53 in a game they lost.
Yeah, Branch McCracken was the coach over there. Yeah,
He believed in running, and Harry believed in running. And I wish I had asked Dave about defense in those days because, let me give you the previous year that the Illinois team in 62 had a good team. That's when
Colangelo was on.
Right, Colangelo was replaced the next year by Brody. But on that team, look at the scores of their last game. Well, they got into kind of a slump at the end of the season. This is the 62 season. They gave up 100 to Purdue, 103 to Wisconsin, 102 to Ohio State, 88 to Iowa, and 104 at Indiana. Four consecutive games. They almost averaged giving up 100 points a game.
Who were you rooting for yesterday, Kansas or Duke?
I saw that game. Here's how I viewed that game. You tell me. I viewed this as a game that Duke was going. This is the kind of game that Duke always seemed to win and Kansas always seemed to lose. It was Kansas' turn, And they made some great shots. They had to make the three to tie it with about 25 seconds to go. And they just made enough shots. But I think that the Duke zone defense was really, I want to use the word porous. I mean, it's not a good defense.
Yeah.
It was the best.
Yeah, it wasn't Syracuse's zone.
Oh, no. I think they went to it out of desperation because the man-to-man wasn't working. Those young guys just didn't play good defense. If you kept that team together for a couple of years, which they won't because mm-hmm. the freshman will turn pro, certainly. Bagley, I mean, he's gone, right?
He's a beast.
Yeah.
Wow, he's tough.
But when you have so many young players, I think defense is a real problem. And I thought really late in the game, I thought Allen tried to take it over in the last 2 minutes mm-hmm. of regulation.
They kept running plays for him.
Well, either that or he was running plays for himself, one or the other.
Yeah, it was like a C. I don't know if that meant captain or what it meant, but there was a couple of times they cleared out. He almost won the game.
Won the game. Yeah. He did.
All right, to the phones here this morning, and Bill is with us this morning. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Brian. One thing when we're talking about Dave Downey, it's important for a lot of these young kids to realize that was long before the three-point shot. So
right.
when he made those 50 and when the opponents were making 100 points, that was more phenomenal than some of the things that are happening today, I think.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, but it also makes you wonder, what were the other guys doing defensively? Was everything a fast break? I don't know. You know, the interesting thing about this Loyola team to me, they did not score a fast break basket against Kansas State till deep in the second half. Why? Because they had five guys going to the defensive board, all five. No fast breaks. When Illinois played, they had one outlet pass, another pass, and a shot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a different way. The game was played differently. Harry believed in running. He wanted to get 100 shots in a game.
And McCracken, what the Hurry and Hoosiers is what they called them,
same
right?
thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, Bill. That's a great point. And I think a Rick Mount scored all those points, no three-point shot. I mean, and he took shots that were well beyond the three-point line.
And they figured out how many he would have actually scored. You know, he averaged 40. He probably would average nearly 50 because he shot a lot of shots from that distance.
He and Maravich.
Yep.
Hey, Bill, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Great to hear from you. And Eric. Hey, Eric, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Lauren, you were just talking about the Duke game. You know, it never ceases to amaze me how a team as good as Duke and a coach as great, supposedly, as Coach K is, doesn't know how to foul with up three with under 30 seconds to go. You know, they only had four fouls at that point in the game, meaning they could have given, like, five fouls, literally five fouls before they would even have shot two shots. It was unconscionable the way that finished it. He never should give a three up at that spot.
That's when Kansas started with
30 seconds to go. That's a little early. I mean, no, but your point, he wasn't going to shoot free throws, huh? They only had
four fouls.
Well, that means that, in other words, they could have fouled twice as they did ultimately.
They could have fouled twice with mm-hmm. nothing happening, and then one and ones after that. I mean, the chances of Kansas winning at that point are slim and none when you start doing that kind of stuff rather than what they did. So. It's amazing.
Well, I don't think people foul in those situations. I don't think coaches foul. I know that. I mean, they had two to give, but with 30 seconds to go, do you start doing that?
Do you make them in? You know, run it down to a certain point, and make them inbound it two or three times. I guess is the goal. Right?
You could do that
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So and then with the Kansas State Kentucky game in the Sweet 16. I don't know how many free throws Kentucky missed in that game, but that was the whole difference, I believe, in the game, right?
Yeah, when Washington missed 12 by himself.
Yeah, the one guy missed a bunch of them.
12.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, that helped Kansas State, you know, keep it close. And, you know, Kansas State had kind of that they couldn't score, but, boy, could they defend, you know, mm-hmm. and they just couldn't score enough to win against Loyola. But, you know, I knew if the game was close, I thought Kansas State would win because I thought Kentucky's freshman will make a mistake. Or they'll panic, or they'll do something
unusual. You can't have Washington in the game at the end of the game. You just simply can't. You can't afford to allow him to be fouled, and it's like throwing the ball out of bounds. I thought, if I'm Kentucky, I take him out. I don't care how good he plays. You can't have him in there at the very end.
Yeah. Hey, Eric, I got to run for the news, but thank you.
Thank you.
356-9397 is how you join us on the phones. We've had a couple of callers, some texts and emails as well. Michael Kaiser News Headlines. We appreciate Dave Downey coming in. Tim Brando in the second hour for a while. well, to get his view from a national perspective, I guess, as he's a signature voice of college basketball and athletics in the second hour on Penny for Your Thoughts.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357.
Cheer for Old Loyola, fight for victory, spread her fame and her fair name with constant loyalty. You are a cheer, our alma mater, love her son so true. Onward to victory, Loyola U, Loyola U.
That'll be the one and only time you'll ever hear that here in Champaign, I would think. Well, there you go. I mean, they're in the Final Four, so, and they're from the state of Illinois. So.
And they're playing good, and they're going to give Michigan fits.
It's going to be, I think that's the early game of the two.
Yeah.
I think it ought to be the late game, just with the storyline that they could build up for that. All right, real quick, Woods Basement Systems, one of our sponsors here, protect your home investment. Get your free estimate from Woods and fix any basement and crawl space cracks once and for all. Since 1986, the Woods family has helped over 55,000 homeowners, and our basement or crawl space wall cracks a problem, and about the foundations of your home. I mean, these are problems you can't, and they will not heal themselves. So get some help from Woods Basement Systems. Their number to call is 888-935-4333, or go online to woodsbasementsystems.com, 888-935-4333, or woodsbasementsystems.com. So again, in the Final Four, you got Loyola in Michigan, you got Villanova in Kansas, the Louisville and Mississippi State teams on the women's side in the Final Four, and the other two Elite Eight games are between Notre Dame and Oregon and between UConn and South Carolina. Of course, we all know about UConn, and South Carolina won it last year. They'll be played today.
Boy, that's that tournament is so lopsided. It's hard to get interested in it until one of those two teams plays, right?
That's right. We're at 9:41. We got Mike Reese on the line. Mike Reese, voice of the Salukis, is with us. Mike, how are you?
I'm great, Mr. Barnhart, Mr. Tate. Pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah. Hey, we just want to have you on a couple of minutes here, and because you had being a Valley guy down at Southern. You had a front row seat for Loyola all year. So are you surprised by this at all or not?
Well, certainly when a Valley team makes the Final Four that isn't the behemoth that Creighton and Wichita State were, Creighton didn't make it, Wichita did, you're surprised. But Loyola really shredded Southern, Brian, both in Chicago in January and in Carbondale in late February. And just the way they played told you that they had something special. And while you wouldn't have thought that they were a Final Four, I certainly thought that they were capable, with the right draw, of being a Sweet 16 team. I thought their draw, they were pretty well underseeded. That was a slap in the Valley's face as the eighth-ranked league to get an 11th seed. And so that part was disappointing. But back to the original point. Loyola can play. Their teamwork, they really show how you can run a club offensively. Plus, they defend, and they also show you the value of having guys that play 3 and 4 years, which is what they have. So they're very good. I thought at Sweet 16, but Final Four, no.
Well, we got you. You saw Jordan Caroline at SIU. Tell us about him. And of course, you know what he's done at Nevada. He's got another year to play. What are your thoughts about Jordan Caroline?
Yeah, and there is a lot of talk that we hear, Lauren, that he'll end up at U of I. I love watching him play, and I thought when they played Loyola, the first thing that struck me is how hard he plays. He's a great guy, and he probably is 20 pounds heavier than he was at Carbondale, and he was strong here. He was on the All-Valley freshman team, and Southern didn't want to lose him. but he wanted to play in a pro system, and that's what Eric Musselman offered. While he started, I think, every game but three at Southern, and was the leading rebounder his freshman year, he wanted to go somewhere where he knew he was the five, but that would allow him to shoot the three. And what he told me in Vegas when Southern played them in December, Lauren, was that, I'm still playing the five, but they allow me to shoot the three and shoot facing. And that's really what he wanted. And he wanted to get on a stage where he could show his talents for the possibility of playing in the pros. He has a lot of people in his family who were pros, albeit in different sports, who think their kid is a pro player. And God, he's huge. God, he plays hard.
Doesn't he?
And my goodness, it's just infectious, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's the kind of guy that Underwood would just drool over. I mean, he just gives no quarter, and he plays hard both on both ends, and he rebounds hard, and he's got some explosiveness to him too. And I don't know what he doesn't have as a he's got every element, it looks to me like, except of course it's a long way to the NBA, but he'll make a living playing basketball somewhere.
Well, the issues come when he starts shooting facing, and you wonder why doesn't he get closer to the goal, because he's going to shoot in the 40% range when he's shooting the mid-range jumper, Lauren, and the three dips at around 30%. Now, when he starts doing those things, if he can develop that full game, now that's an awesome package, because he's not afraid to rebound, and he's not afraid to do the quote-unquote dirty work.
Mike Reese is with us. A couple minutes here. He's the voice of the Southern Illinois Salukis. How many years, Dale?
39. This is wrapping up the 39th.
Wow.
Brian.
Wow, you've been there a long time then. You've seen a lot of
you with that
seen
one, didn't I? Oh my God! Why would somebody do that? And you're sitting across the table from Tate, and you're wowed by 39.
By the way, did you watch the Illini baseball games the other day at SIU?
I did, yes, and we did them on television. I like his team, Lorne.
Yeah,
He's
got a good one if the pitching holds up, because he's got the relief pitching. It comes down to the starters, I think, and a good three-game sweep in Northwestern, incredible three-game sweep, 2 one-run wins and an extra inning win. How about that?
That's extra. Then that's amazing they got all three games in, too, in Chicago.
That's the most amazing thing of all.
Hey, Gerber is tremendous. That's a big league closer.
Yeah,
you're
know.
Right. And those 1-2 starters are going to have to hang in, and that would be something if transfers take you to postseason. And to totally overhaul 2/3 of your starting staff, that would be impressive. But his club is much improved over a year ago.
Mike, before we wrap it up, SIU finished second to Loyola this year in the Valley. You talked about matchups, Michigan, the next opponent, potentially Villanova or Kansas. What's the better route here for Loyola, do you think?
Well, in the semifinals, and look, I'm not going to try to snow you that I know enough about Michigan. I do hear people who know the Big Ten who say that Michigan and Loyola play very, very similarly. But beyond that, I'm not going to try to snow you. I will say the one thing that would be in Loyola's favor is the intangible. Half the players are from Illinois and the Midwest. They have the two from Kansas City who played high school ball together. Richardson and Custer, and then part of the reason they got a lot better is they finally started getting players from Chicago, and moving into the Valley helped them get those players. So, but when you have half your roster from the Midwest, those are people that wanted to play in the Big Ten. And so here's their chance to play in the Big Ten. And in Custer's case, he played in the Big 12. So the Kansas City kids and the guys, and they have a player from Bloomington as well, they're Division I players who all would have hoped that they could have played Big Ten. And so I think that's an intangible that plays in their favor. I don't think they'll be frightened by the stage. And those are two important intangibles to have on your side. When you have that ability to have the when you have motivation driving you to prove that you're something that everybody thinks that you're not, and in the player's case, being a better player than Big Ten teams thought. We've seen that drive SIU in its glory run from 02 to 07, and I would expect it to drive Loyola on Saturday, because one of their assistants is one of SIU's all-time best players, Brian Mullins, and that drove Brian when he was at Southern for sure. And I'm certain that that's, if unsaid, that's an important part of Loyola this weekend.
So let me ask you, Mike, you, like me, had the pleasure of working with Bruce Weber at a personal level, yeah. A professional. Who are you rooting for, the Valley or Bruce the other day?
The other day I was rooting for Bruce. I mean, yeah. Those are three there's three SIU guys on that staff, and so there's one on the Loyola staffs, and plus now Loyola's in the league, so I took it as strictly numbers. It was 3-2 in favor of Kansas State, so I rooted for Kansas State. I felt bad that they lost, and I felt even worse that they lost and by the margin that they did, yeah. But either way, I felt like I was going to win personally because the Loyola program is very likable. The image that they're projecting, fellas, and this is how you decide, you guys have been around it long enough, how are you in reality versus what is your image? And Loyola has a very good image right now publicly, and I can assure you that behind the scenes on a daily basis, they are the same way.
All right. Well, the last time the Valley and the Big Ten met in the Final Four was Indiana State and Michigan State. So,
oh, my goodness.
How about that, huh? A little nugget. You can feel free to use that. I won't charge you.
Bruce, I wouldn't have paid anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike. It's great to catch up with you. You're a great friend. And keep up the great work down in Carbondale.
Same here. Thank you, Brian. Right. Thank you, Lauren.
Yep. That's Mike Reese. He does the Salukis. Football and basketball. We'll come back with more after this timeout on Penny for Your Thoughts. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts. Say, if you've ever been a collision, I know some people were over the weekend with all the snow. Well, Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair is the place to contact. They're a full-service collision repair facility. They know having a car accident's a serious matter. Dave Miller and Bill Gallo are passionate about their business. They've been in it for 18 years. They've repaired over 23,000 vehicles. Dave and Bill, they're hands-on in their business. They've been in the collision repair business inside and out. They know the insurance business. They know the body shop business. They've combined it. And free estimates are always offered, so make sure you bring your car there, and they know what a hassle it can be. You're in an accident. Your mind's racing 1,000 miles an hour. What do? I need to call the insurance. I need to do this. I need to do X. I need to do Y. I need to do Z. Well, they can help with all of that, so just give them the keys. They're conveniently and centrally located in Champaign-Urbana, the south side of I-74, between Neal and Prospect. GalloMiller.com is where you can go and check out their facility and their website. Lauren Tate is with me, Monday morning quarterbacking here. We have this show and then next week, and then we'll wrap it up for Monday morning quarterbacks for the year. We usually do it between the football and basketball seasons. Final Four is set. A couple of things here, Lauren. I learned watching all the commercials on the NCAA tournament. Here's some things I've learned over the last 3 weeks. Okay.
From Barkley?
No, just for me. Yeah, Barkley and others. The manatees wear novelty tees. I don't know if you've seen that. These are some of the commercials. Come at me, bro, say to a friend. Trust me, I'm an actor. Deers like to play with cantaloupes.
Yeah, they do.
Armadillos are really turtle rats. You can pay for things at a glance. You can fall in love with a woman, a country, and yourself. It's the progressive box guy.
Okay.
Morgan Freeman has really cold breath after drinking Mountain Dew.
Mm-hmm.
And people can be known for eating at some place a lot. So those are some of the things.
So what you're doing is repeating things that some really smart people in advertising,
yep,
get together at a board meeting and they say, have you got anything? And they come up with all these ideas.
That's right.
Think of all the ones they throw away that aren't good enough.
Yeah. Well, they've hooked me on
and
some of them.
Think of all the ones that they use that aren't good enough.
35397 is how you can join us on the phones. So we're just kind of kicking things around here. The NCAA Final Four is set, of course. Baseball about to begin this week. Saw the Cardinals play a couple of times over the weekend. I guess Adam Wainwright's on the disabled list,
on the disabled,
to start.
They're going to use Flaherty in there if they need a fifth starter. In the beginning of the season, you don't really need five because you got the off days, but I think they're going to use Flaherty.
They're going to be up in Montreal playing the Blue Jays.
Yep. You know who's really looked good in the practices so far is Weaver. He is really throwing well. And so, you know, maybe he'll take that next step. Flaherty hasn't taken that step yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll see.
Illinois baseball with a sweep, a couple of extra inning games up in the cold in Northwestern.
Yeah, and they're just good enough. Can you imagine playing in that kind of temperature? And it just had to be freezing, but they played every day, all 3 days when the snow was coming here. Evidently, it wasn't coming in Evanston. and great wins, just clutch plays in every game.
What are they won now? 13 out of 15, 14
something
out of like something
that,
like
yeah,
that.
Something yeah. like that, yeah.
Had quite a streak going. You can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Benny says, good morning, congratulations to Bill Self and my Kansas Jayhawks. He couldn't lose in this game.
Yeah.
And congrats to Coach K and my Duke Blue Devils on a great season.
Well, now, I'm going to tie the Mississippi thing in
real quick. Yeah.
Real quick. First of all, we know that Lou Henson broke the color barrier at Hardin-Simmons, and then that's how he got the job at New Mexico State. At that very time, neither Ole Miss nor Mississippi State could take black players out of their own state. Lou Henson went in there, got Sam Lacy and some other guys, and really formed the New Mexico State team that started beating Texas Western and went to the NCAA, I think, in 1968, went to the Final Four in 68, something like that,
something
with Sam
like,
Lacy
yeah. mm-hmm.
and Jimmy Collins, and of course, he was from Syracuse. But my point is that he took advantage of the situation. It all ties together. He might never have been the Illinois coach if he hadn't had success at New Mexico State, and he had that success because of his ability to break down the color barriers and bring in players that mm-hmm. other people wouldn't recruit.
Which tied in with all of the Mississippi State versus Loyola in the Mid-East Regional in East Lansing when Illinois played Loyola.
Yeah, that was 1963, and
yeah.
of course Lou took over at New Mexico State in 66-67, which was the same, you know, about the same time that those schools in the SEC were just beginning to bring in students, mm-hmm. let alone, Mississippi brought in James Meredith, with the federal marshals and troops supporting
yeah.
him, and he enrolled at the same time in 1963, the same year that Dave Downey and the guys played Loyola.
All right, to the phones we go. Alan, good morning. How are you, sir?
Morning, guys. I'm going to try to make three comments about three sports.
Okay.
Baseball, first one. One, I like the Cardinals starting eight. I'm just curious how their bullpen's going to hold up, but starting eight is going to be as good as anybody in baseball, in my opinion, because they got the speed and they got the power, and we'll just have to see on that.
Okay.
Basketball. Is there a chance that Jordan Caroline might come to Illinois?
Well, there's a chance anybody might come. I mean, they're recruiting the devil out of him. Been recruiting him for weeks. But
is he a graduate?
Yeah, he's a fourth-year guy, and, you know, they have a progress toward graduation rule that almost demands that you graduate in 4 years. But whether he will leave Nevada and come here is dependent on several things, including his girlfriend who lives in Sacramento and has a baby by him, and she doesn't want to leave, I don't think, and so that'll be a problem. Yes,
okay.
They're recruiting him. Will he come? I have no idea.
Okay, football, Isaiah Williams, that's a great get, but he's kind of small, isn't he?
Yep.
That might be a problem, but he might be able to play other positions. If he wants to,
I think they're going to give him a shot.
He looks like he's got a great arm. Of course, he's got great speed and great mm-hmm. elusiveness.
And he's got
long time.
And he's got the right name.
That's right.
Yeah.
Isaiah Williams.
Juice tooth.
That's right. Hey, Alan, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for the phone call. 9:59. Tim Brando is going to join us in the second hour, one of the signature voices of college athletics. We'll visit with him a little bit after 10, then an open line the rest of the way up until the top of the hour. So Lauren Tate and I, we've been visiting with Dave Downey today, reminisced a little bit about the 1963 Loyola-Illinois game, the Mideast Regional Final up in East Lansing, and some of the things that occurred in and around that game that Loyola eventually won, made it to the Final Four that year, and of course they're back now in the Final Four for the first time since then. We're approaching 10 o'clock. Keep the phone calls, emails, and texts coming in on WDWS. Champaign-Urbana, it's 10 o'clock.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at WDWS.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And welcome back. Hour number two of A Penny for Your Thoughts. We've had a busy show today as we do our Monday morning quarterback show here with, of course, a longtime columnist. Lauren Tate is here alongside as well. And we've talked to Illini great Dave Downey along the way. Of course, Dave was part of the Illinois team that played the 1963 Loyola Ramblers in the Mideast Final up in East Lansing, Michigan. And Loyola went on to win that particular ball game and would go on to win the national championship. The Ramblers have been the story of the NCAA tournament this year, and so we talked about that a little bit. Talked to Southern Illinois play-by-play man Mike Reese, who's been down in Carbondale for about four decades, and he had a front-row seat in the Valley for Loyola, and pleased to have had him on as well. And also a privilege today to have Tim Brando, longtime announcer, of course, play-by-play, CBS, ESPN, now with Fox Sports, and I think one of the signature voices in college athletics as well, and other sports to boot. But Tim, great to have you on today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Happy to be with you, Brian, and certainly enjoyed seeing you through the course of the Big Ten season, and look forward to, you know, who knows, maybe getting your way come football season this coming fall.
Well, we'll look forward to that, and talk about your trips to Illinois. I know you had not been back in the Assembly Hall / State Farm Center for quite a while. Your impressions and overall, I guess, of Brad Underwood and where he's headed.
Loved it. You know, really enjoyed it. The first game, the game with Iowa, was during the time in which the students were out, so the building wasn't as loud as it would normally be. The decibel meter wasn't what I remembered it back in the 80s when I came in with ESPN during the great Lou Dew period with Bardo and all those great players that he had surrounding him on that team. But the second game when they played Michigan State, I thought, you know, that was that it was high flying, and it was a lot of fun. And I felt the same way when Purdue came in. You know, I had three visits, so it was great. And I know that Brad Underwood, what he's building, is going to be very special. There's no doubt about that in my mind. It's not a question of if, it's just when. You know, from a recruiting standpoint for him and what he does, and their style of play is just, you know, they dictate pace of play. It's very similar to Press Virginia, you know, what Huggs does, and a little bit like, too, I think half-court principles are very similar to what Texas Tech does. So he just needs to get, as they say in the business, he needs to get his dudes in there. You know, once he gets his dudes, Illinois will be fine.
Tim Brando with us for a few minutes here on Monday Morning Quarterbacks. And Tim, let me ask you, as you know, you were in the middle of it. College basketball took some hits this year. There's no doubt about that. But this tournament kind of reminds us of why you and me and others are in this business and why we love college basketball, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think any of us that covered the sport regularly, you know, through the course of the regular season didn't see this coming. I think we all expected mayhem in March, and that there is an 11 seed that made it to the Final Four, which has happened before. It's happened three other times. Is not terribly surprising to us. It could have been. We might have seen even more multiple double-digit seeds go a little bit deeper. We were very close to it, but at the same time, I think that in a lot of ways, maybe what we should take away from this is, there's a lot to love, even though there's a lot of concern. And we've got major problems that need to be addressed and need to be repaired. It's going to take, I think, a lot of reasonably intelligent people thinking maybe outside the box a little bit to come up with some determinations on what to be done. I thought what the Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman suggested through their recommendations is noteworthy. And as for the popularity of the sport, let me point out, and this has been somewhat under the radar, but Fox's college basketball ratings for the regular season were up almost 30%. And a lot of that was due, obviously, to the addition of the Big Ten. But that should tell people something. There is interest in the regular season of college basketball, especially in the stronghold of college basketball areas, that being the Sun Belt region, in the midsection of the country, and certainly in the Big Ten, where the audience is particularly loyal. So, you know, the people that are predicting the death and destruction of college basketball are out of their minds.
Tim, this is Lauren Tate. I thought that Purdue's demise was excusable because of what happened with Haas. Explain to me what happened to Michigan State. I mean, this was a team that trailed Northwestern by 28 that had ups and downs during the season. I thought this was extremely talented, but something was wrong with that team. Explain it.
Guard play had been a little better in the second half of the season. I thought Winston had improved, but that was always the concern, I think, with Michigan State. The inability to get – like, for instance, if you watched yesterday how Villanova moved the ball, how Winston gets such great dribble penetration to create open shots. You know, he sometimes could drive the ball through the lane almost to the baseline, back out, and then suddenly find an open three-point shooter. Michigan State could not get that kind of dribble penetration from its guards.
Right.
And as a result, I think they never really got that kind of space for open jump shots. Most of their shots were contested. They had more difficulty with, you know, the Syracuse zone than certainly Kansas had with the Duke zone, by example. And I think that's a byproduct of you know, not having great guard play. As great as Michigan State's front line was, and it was exceedingly athletic, I'll point back to the game at Illinois. 25 turnovers they had in that game.
That's right.
And most of them were in the first half. And Illinois, even though they gave up a lot of open dunks and they gave up a lot of, because of their pressure, that's going to happen, they stayed in that game. They were never completely knocked out of that game until about the last 90 seconds. Because you thought, well, they could still cause some turnovers. So Michigan State's only issue this year was its suspect guard play. And I thought in the tournament it showed up yet again.
Now, explain Jaren Jackson. He was 0-for-4 in that final game for Michigan State. And I saw him against Illinois where I thought he was a Superman. I've seen him other games where he just seemed to be kind of quiet. And where does he wind up in the draft after that?
Well, think about this. This is, again, the peril of the one and done, all right? And all of these coaches that have future lottery picks, or let's just say one and done players, they can't push the same buttons that they did years ago. I mean, they can't. Even when, for instance, Draymond Green was at Michigan State, Draymond was not destined to be a first rounder. He went in the second round and was a late bloomer and made it. How many times did in the last 9 minutes, how many shots yesterday did Marvin Bagley get? Did you keep up with that in the game for Duke? He had one shot in the last 9 minutes of that game. Now you tell me who the best player on the floor is for Coach K. It's Marvin Bagley.
Yes.
And he not only did he not get looks, he didn't work hard to get them. So what you're dealing with the one-and-done player is a guy that once he gets to the tournament, and I'm not saying they're bad kids. Don't get me wrong, all right? I'm not saying that. In a lot of ways, the one-and-done is not bad for the tournament. In fact, I think to some extent it helps interest because there are a lot of people that only watch the NCAA tournament to see these stars because they really only care about where they might go in the draft and they're really more NBA fans than they are college basketball fans. But Mike Krzyzewski having to play the zone, let me tell you something. He would never come out of that zone because his guys can't guard man-to-man. Yep. Lottery picks don't want man-to-man. But you can't use the same sort of mental approach as a coach with these guys to keep them engaged as you did 15, 20 years ago. You know, I almost laughed in the regional semifinals, I think it was Friday night, when they actually slapped the floor playing the zone. I almost laughed out loud when I saw that. Duke could not play a man-to-man. Mike knew that, and actually when he made the change to go full zone, they did improve defensively, no doubt about it. But the same is true for Tom when he's dealing with players like Jaren Jackson. And I'm not saying, again, this is not an indictment on the kid. It's just the nature of the beast that we're dealing with today. These guys know where their future is, and they're going to have limitations on how many times they're going to throw their body on the floor and become human floor burns for the common good of our college team. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult road for these coaches to deal with. And these are Hall of Fame guys we're talking about. I mean, Izzo and Mike are as good as it gets, but their jobs are different than those coaches that know that they've got different types of players. Now, if, by example, Villanova doesn't have lottery picks, but they've got future pros, and look how they share the ball, and look how they work defensively as a team. That's really the difference, in my opinion, why Villanova's going to win it all.
Tim, I got one more, and this is a tough one. How do you pay the players? How can you break away from Title IX? How do you separate basketball, or let's say basketball and football, the main money sports, from all the other sports in college?
Fellas, I think it's very easy. The schools should not be on the hook to pay these players anything. Today's young athletes know how to brand themselves. They can do it through Instagram. They can do it through all forms of social media. They, you know, amateurism's status is the problem. We need to change what amateurism is and go more the Olympic route. And if players, whether they're offensive linemen in football or wide receivers or what, go get you some. Whatever you can do to promote yourself and brand yourself while in college should be absolutely open doors for you, because you can't work in the summer. These guys are, for anyone to say that they have the whole summer off, go over to the training facility and see how many of them are actually out of there. They're all there, okay, no matter what the sport. If these young men are going to be asked to go and show up and have their likeness sold at the local fans' souvenir shop, they should be getting a percentage of that, and they should have the right to say, you know what, if my likeness is being used this or that way, here's my circumstance, and here's what I want for that. And I think the NCAA needs to update its own rules. That's the issue. If we just updated the rules, we wouldn't have a problem. I don't think the schools, other than the full cost of tuition, really should have to worry about this at all. We've already taken the necessary steps to make life easier for the modern-day internet athlete. But those athletes do deserve more if the market says they should. And I think the market does, especially at the major schools around the country. And if, by the way, you happen to be going to a smaller school, and those are the only schools that were coming after you, I've talked to a lot of those types of athletes, and they're just happy to have books and tuition. But I think that's what needs to be done. Let's just have some common sense here, and we can move forward. But right now, we've got too many people running to the hills to protect their own butts. And that's the problem we have in intercollegiate athletics.
Tim Brando with us for a few minutes. We're on Monday Morning Quarterbacks. Brian Barnhart here with Lauren Tate. You talk about the one-and-dones. Michigan and Loyola certainly are older teams, and or in a sense, they play together. I just love that matchup. How about you?
I do, too. I can't wait to see it. I'll be leaving for San Antonio Thursday, and I've not missed the Final Four. I've only missed two since 1981, fellas. I missed the one in Kemper Arena with Danny and the Miracles in 88, and I missed the one in 96 when Patino's team pulled it out against Syracuse in 96. I love the event, and I'll be there, and I can't wait for it. I'll tell you, I think Michigan, to me, I thought when they beat Texas A&M, the winner of that game would likely come out of that bracket and get to the championship game. But Loyola is, fellas, a smaller version of Villanova. The way they share the ball, Ingram and Custer, and these guys are really legitimate. And I think these two Kansas kids, the Richardson kid, was just off the charts the other day. Those two together, I mean, they play and share the basketball, and they also defend really well. Michigan's going to have a lot to chew on between now and then, but I think Beilein is one of the great tacticians in our sport. I think he's one of the top four or five college basketball coaches in America and has been for some time. I think their size and strength, Mo Wagner has really gotten away with some poor outings. I think the best is yet to come from Michigan. So I see Michigan prevailing, but it's going to be a whale of a game.
Before we let you go, Tim, you've done a lot of radio work over the years. Do you mind taking a call? I know you're used to doing that. So
not at all. Okay. Not at all.
You've done this a few thousand times. Let's go to
Tim. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Tim in Urbana. Go ahead.
Yeah, Tim. I have two questions. You think we're going to get an 18 playoff in football? And my second question is the targeting rule. Are they basically taking the hard hit out of football with the shoulder pad, even if you don't hit him in the helmet? You know, you got a defensive player that hits an offensive receiver, but I still think hard hits can change the way the game's played, and I hope we're not going to touch. Thanks for calling the games, and I appreciate you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. The targeting rule is something we all have to live with and understand that moving forward, intercollegiate athletics does not have the financial wherewithal to, you know, pay off legal situations like the NFL. And so we're going to continue to make it more about player safety all the time. We're going to become more stringent on it all the time. Now, I think that particularly now, since most of the conferences have the means to use replay and have not only the guys upstairs in the press box overseeing it, but people back in Chicago in their offices also overseeing it, we need to move the game along more quickly. I think the biggest challenge is to, whether it is or isn't targeting, let's come to a determination as quickly as we can so we can get the game moving. That's a concern. But as far as what constitutes targeting, we've got to make it easier, I think, for those that are actually on the field governing the game. The problem is there's no way for anyone upstairs in a booth or anyone in a room in Chicago for the Big Ten or in Birmingham for the SEC, there's no way for them to understand whether there was intent for the player to actually have malice in his approach to making a tackle, especially in a bang-bang situation in the secondary. Only a white hat, only officials on the field really can make that determination. Now, I know, you know, that brings up that, that Pandora's box of, well, okay, now we're going to be charging the officials with determining judgment on the part of the players. Gosh, that seems really problematic. But I think that's the only way to determine it. Once you've determined, first and foremost, that the player did not lead with his head, he led with his shoulder. But if he makes contact with the head above the shoulders, that still warrants targeting. All right, that's a given. We need to understand that. But I think we do need to give, especially with regard to, penalizing a player and taking him off the field, sometimes with members of security ushering him out, make the player, I think, many times look like a convict. And that's just wrong. That's fundamentally wrong. It should not be that penal. We got to clean that up and make it better. That's not in the best interest of the athlete. And I think that we need to be very careful with that moving forward. As it relates to the 18 format, I think we will, in my lifetime, fellas, and your lifetimes too, because I'm sure you're a lot younger than me. I think we will see an 18 playoff, and I think part of the reason we will is financially, we just don't. You know, there's a lot of money still out there that's being left on the table. Even though the ratings were very good for last year's national championship game, they could have been far larger. Imagine if there had been a spot available for UCF last year in the college football playoff. The interest that – think about what Loyola Marymount has done – well, not Loyola, Loyola Marymount, Loyola of Chicago. Think about what they've done these last 2 weeks. That is a great part of this year's college basketball postseason story. We totally eliminate that now in college football. Even when we had the BCS, Boise had far greater chances to get in the mix than we do now with four teams, given the way we govern the postseason and legitimize these teams for possible postseason berths. UCF had no chance this year. All you have to do is look at the ratings and the metrics that were delivered to the college football committee. They had no chance. And I don't know how many more teams from the American Conference have to beat legitimate powerhouses in a New Year's Six bowl game to get them eligibility. I think they're worthy of a Power Six pick. I really do. They are clearly the best of the Group of Five conferences. But if we had the UCF story that the rest of the country could gravitate to, then I think you're bringing in far more regions of the country. If we're looking to grow college football, You're not going to grow it much more than it already is in the Big Ten or in the SEC. You got to get people that ordinarily would not be engaged to the college game to come to our sport. And the way to do that is have stories like UCF or whoever this year's UCF will be, give them an opportunity to get in. And going to six teams won't get that done. We have to go to eight, I think, to reserve the opportunity for a team from the group of five to get in. But I do think it'll happen. It won't be for the good of the game. It will be because they're in need of more cash, and more cash can be made if you have an additional week's games and greater inventory for ESPN. But ultimately, that's going to be who determines this, fellas. The people that have the rights from a television standpoint are going to look at this and say, you know what, we're not delivering the ratings for the advertisers that we promised, and we need to be making more money out of this thing because of the great investment we've made. And I think we'll ultimately see eight teams. It's doable, and it's not going to cause any of any problems with regard to classes or the crossing overs of semesters. None of that's going to be in play, so why not go ahead and get it done?
Hey, Tim, it's been a pleasure having you on today. We've covered a lot of ground, and we'll do this again sometime, okay? I've really enjoyed having you on today.
Love to do it, and it was a lot of fun. I can't wait to get back to Champaign. I really can't.
Thanks, right. Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.
Have fun in San Antonio. That is Tim Brando, signature voice, college, pro sports. One of my favorites. I know the last, as I've been in my career and got a chance to know people like that, just great to visit with someone like that.
You know, when they do a lot of play-by-play and that sort of thing, they can't expand the way he did for us today.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great stuff.
All right. Michael Kaiser has news headlines. We've got a lot to get to in our last half hour. We'll do that next.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS.
Back on Penny for Your Thoughts, Monday morning quarterback. Today we have had Lauren Tate, we've had Dave Downey, Mike Reese, and Tim Brando. Tomorrow we have an open line in the 9 o'clock hour. 10 a.m. is on the money. Wednesday morning at 9, Peter Fox, developer, will be on. Of course, a lot of people know Peter. He'll be on with us at 9 a.m., open line at 10 on Wednesday. Thursday morning, because it's opening day, Darren Fletcher, former Illini, he's in the Illinois Hall of Fame, will be. Of course, played at Illinois, played many years in the major leagues. He'll be in studio with me on Thursday morning at 9. We'll talk about the start of the Major League Baseball season. 10 a.m., the Prairie Dragon Paddlers with the breast cancer survivors. We'll tell you about an event with them. Open line in and around all of that. Friday morning at 9, an open line. And then 10 a.m. Friday, last Friday of the month, last hour of the last Friday, Flashback Friday. We'll tell you more about that as we work our way through the week. All right, some texts and emails and information to pass along. Tonight at the Esquire, Martin O'Donnell is the guest of the News Gazette sports page, live at the Esquire. Illinois baseball and the D1Baseball.com poll. Now, they've been ranked in a couple of polls, but now 25 in that poll. And they were scheduled to play at Bradley tomorrow, but they're exploring the possibility of adding a game for Wednesday instead of playing that game Tuesday at Bradley. That game will not take place for Illinois baseball. Illinois softball, 2 out of 3 in West Lafayette. Doubleheader sweep on Friday, 14-6 and 10-2 before the snow got here. They'll play Northwestern on Wednesday at 3. Illini women's gymnastics team hosted the Big Ten Championships this weekend, and the Illini finished third. They'll find out their NCAA regional spot this afternoon at 3. Illini women's tennis went to Hawaii and Santa Barbara, California, won both of those matches recently. Men's golf team won a title at the Bighorn Invitational in Palm Desert, California. So a win there for Mike Small's team.
They were 20 under yesterday, by just one day. I mean, they were 21 under the first two rounds, and then they just doubled that in the final round. That they really got some great play this weekend. That changes our whole mindset on where this golf team is, because I think previously I think Small might have been starting to worry a little bit.
Brian Baumgarten won the individual medalist honor for the Illini. They finished 10 strokes ahead of second place Mississippi State.
They had 6 birdies in the last 9 holes.
You've done that.
Oh, right? Yeah. I had 6 birdies in my career.
We're at 1041, 356-9397 is how you can join us on the phone line. Corey Swanson, a hands-on owner, family-owned business, 100% owned and operated by Corey Swanson and his wife, Melissa. He's a graduate of Rantoul High School in the University of Illinois. Roofing Dog Crew is comprised of roofing professionals certified in roof installation. They've been with the company for many years, and they want every customer to be satisfied, of course, and they guarantee the workmanship of the lifetime of your roof, and the materials they use are guaranteed for 50 years. And if you've got some small repairs you need done, Swanson Roofing, the Roofing Dog, can help with that. Even if they did not do your roof, they are happy to come out and fix any problems. Call for a free estimate, 217-355-ROOF, 217-355-7663, or visit theroofingdog.com. And you have one other note from Ohio State.
Bates Diop going pro. Didn't surprise anybody, yeah, but that's a real blow because when you lose Tate and Bates Diop, that's their 1-2 players, and they'll have to rebuild.
All right, we'll take your phone calls, emails, and texts here the rest of the hour. We're at 10:42. And we'll come back with more for you and relive a moment. Where were you 13 years ago today? We'll talk about that in a moment. All right, 1046-356-9397. Open line tomorrow at 9 and then On the Money. Peter Fox joins us on Wednesday at 9 a.m. We're working on some other guests throughout the month of April as well. I think you'll enjoy here on Penny for Your Thoughts. And, of course, always your phone calls, emails, and texts, 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 3515357. Email us talk at wdws.com. Yes.
Excuse me for cutting in. What's your main subject matter with Peter?
Oh, I think we'll talk about his interest in the ICE facility and
the research park.
Park and all of that. And then maybe his career, too, as we work our way through that. So that'll be fun. All right, let's go to the phones here. Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I just like to say the football's off to a great start in recruiting. I see a lot of interest from a lot of kids throughout the country. My question is basketball. The kid from California, Jones, has been kind of quiet. Are we still in pretty good shape with him? Or
yeah, he's going to announce April 11th.
He's going to
announce from among two or three schools, and Illinois is definitely very strong in there. I mean, they might finish second. They might finish first. I don't know, but Illinois is definitely in there and been working very hard on him, and he'll decide April 11th.
Okay. And what about the point guard that decommitted from Louisville? Is that Ramsey or something like that?
Ramey, R-A-M-E-Y.
Ramey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are we still recruiting him? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're gonna get some kind of a decision out of him in the next week or so, I think, because they've got a backup idea if this doesn't work. And so they have to know something at some point because they've got a really good possibility behind him.
Has he committed to visiting Illinois, or do you know that?
Well, I don't know. He hasn't visited yet. It's got to happen pretty soon because I think we go into a dead period. Brian, we go into a dead period here pretty quick.
I lose track.
Around the Final Four, there's a dead period. So maybe I don't know if he's coming in before or after. That's something I have to learn.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike. Thank you for the call. All right, 13 years ago today, do you know where you were when all of this was happening?
Right now, if I'm Illinois, you want to try to deny Salim Stoudemire the ball if you can. And then you may have to double down on Channing Frye if that's where they're going, Lauren, would you say?
Well, I think if Stoudemire will start it, and if you double-team him, he'll get it to the open man, which is what he's been doing all day. He hadn't had a big scoring day, but it's funny how much we talked about this yesterday at the press conference about if it comes down to this, who takes the final shot?
They're trying to get Bruce Weber to sit down and stay off the court. All right, here we go. 11.8 to go. 90-89 Illinois. The inbound for Arizona. They get it to Shakur. Guarded by D. Brown. Bounce pass on the wing. Adams. Double team. Four. Illinois up one. Arizona. Adams. Jumper. No good. Illinois is going to the Final Four. Illinois is going to the Final Four. 90-89. Look at those Illini jumping around.
Security won't allow the people on the court. Otherwise, we'd have a pack of them out there.
90-89. Most amazing games in Illinois history. Down 15 with 4 minutes to go. Tied at 80 in regulation. Arizona misses the last shot. And the dream season continues. We're headed for St. Louis. We'll see you by the arch.
That was 13 years ago today.
You know the thing I still remember? With the four-minute mark, all the Chicago writers started heading for that room to write their stories.
Yep. all the way down the tunnel and to
yes,
the right.
They had to go across the street. And all of a sudden they get over there and they saw the end of the game on TV and all had to rewrite their leads. We all had to rewrite what we were thinking.
Happily so, yeah.
You bet.
Yeah, it was. I remember thinking at the time, down 15 with 4 minutes to go, thinking, how am I going to recap this season? I mean, how do you put all this into a bottle and, you know, put the lid on it and be done? I didn't know how to do it.
And didn't have to do it.
Didn't have to do it. I didn't have to worry about it, as it turned out. But and I know the I think the story is that they had the box of hats, regional championship hats, at the end of the Arizona bench.
Oh, they did?
You know, ready to distribute,
oh, sure,
to hand out, and then they had to somehow get those back. and I don't know whatever happened to those hats. But anyway, that was a great moment from 13 years ago. Is that right? Yeah, 13 years ago today.
2005.
March 26th.
We haven't had a lot of success since then. Not a lot.
No, a couple of tournaments after that,
yeah.
Little mini runs here and there, but nothing nothing like that. And hopefully, I know that's what Brad Underwood wants to get back to and have more moments like that. All right, 10:51. We'll come back with more after this on Penny for Your Thoughts. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts on this Monday. Enjoyed it very much. Glad you've been along for the ride here today on Penny for Your Thoughts. Lauren Tate is with us. We had Tim Brando on a little bit earlier. Mike Reese, voice of the Salukis, had his perspective on Loyola. And then, of course, Dave Downey, Illini great, with us in the first hour. We'll do Monday Morning Quarterbacks next Monday, and then we'll put it to bed for a while and come back in the fall with all of that. But I want to remind you that Spring Green, I know it's tough to talk about lawns when it's under a few inches of snow, but a yard is an important part of the special place you call home, and let the local lawn care professionals at Spring Green take special care of your lawn and landscape investment and provide the convenience of a trouble-free Spring Green lawn. It's easy to get rid of weeds. Anyone can do it. What's hard is to have your yard looking good all year long, even in those hot summer months, and Spring Green Lawn Care can do that. The University of Illinois trusts Spring Green Lawn Care to provide some specialized applications to the athletic fields at the University of Illinois, and they've got many full-time sprayers. That kind of customer consistency is one reason Spring Green Lawn Care has been a trusted provider of lawn care, tree care, and insect care services for 35 years. And for a limited time, new customers can save 20% off when you choose Spring Green's full program. And if you prepay right now, you'll save up to an additional 10% off the full program price for a total possible savings of 30%. Spring Green, America's neighborhood lawn care team, serving all of East Central Illinois for over 35 years, including Gibson City and the Mattoon, Charleston area. Number to call is 359-2111 or visit spring-green.com. Ask for JT Warm Beer or Steve Emke. 10:56 here, a few minutes to go. By the way, the Illini women's golf team also won an event out in Tucson. So the men were in Palm Desert. The women were in Tucson, Arizona. Track and field winning the pole vault title down for the women in Carbondale. Men's team won six events at the outdoor open there in Carbondale. So some of the events. And football practice resumes this week.
Tomorrow morning.
So, tomorrow morning.
Yep, another week of that. And what did we learn out there so far? What have you learned from the football side?
Well, I know we have a lot more quarterbacks coming.
That's
We haven't had a lot in camp. But, it'll be good to see Mike Dudek move around and do some things. And I know they've got other guys. They play some more and others less. They want to look at different things.
Yeah, there isn't going to be any real spring game, although there must be a spring opportunity for people to come out. But the only thing I will say, I think both lines are taking shape with much more experience than we have had in the past. Obviously, when you start several freshmen last year, you're going to be more experienced this year. And there's a little more depth in the line. I can see things starting to take place there. But we're not seeing everybody out there, and two or three of the running backs have been held out, and Hanson at linebacker, several of the players being held out. So we're not really learning an awful lot. I haven't, at least.
Mm-hmm. Baseball has looked good. Softball started well.
Yeah.
Over in Purdue.
Yalowitz hit a home run in the 10th inning yesterday to beat Northwestern. They've just come through with the clutch hits, and it's been a different guy almost every day, although, it's – I think they're solid in the eight positions. It's just like the Cardinals, or like somebody called in. I think Alan called in this morning. They're really solid at the eight position. It still comes down to the pitching,
mm-hmm.
and right now, they're getting pretty – Illinois got tremendous relief pitching out of Thompson yesterday. I don't know if you heard, but in the eighth inning, in the last of the eighth, Northwestern goes ahead 2-1, has the bases loaded and nobody out. He comes in and strikes out the next three hitters.
Wow.
Now, that saved the game because Illinois was trailing 2-1 at that point. So they go in the ninth, and all they need to do is score one run to tie it. And they fortunately did that. Cron scored on a fly ball to right field that the right fielder caught, a diving catch, and he slid in home on a short throw, barely safe. So that's how close those games are.
One other note, Steve Stricker winning his second straight PGA Tour Champions victory, winning in Biloxi, Mississippi. So good for Steve Stricker.
Yeah, you bet. He's pretty tough in that league.
I would think so.
He's just 51, so he's a young one in that one.
All right. Well, Lauren, it's been fun. Thank you for hanging around today. We'll do it one more time.
Good show, Brian. Good job.
We'll have one more Monday Morning Quarterback show for you next Monday, and then we'll do our regular programming starting the Monday after. And, again, a reminder, we'll have an open line tomorrow on the money, then at 10, and Peter Fox joins us in the 9 o'clock hour on Wednesday. And then later in the week, we'll have the Flashback Friday for you as well. So all of that straight ahead on Penny for Your Thoughts. Thanks for being with us today. This is WDWS Champaign-Urbana. It is now 11 o'clock at the Tone. Have a great day.